Hello, and welcome to the Preview Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting items from the current month's previews catalog. This is Preview Spotlight number 155 for the October 2020 previews. In this episode, we'll be going over some of the items and previews you might find interesting. These episodes have an open submission policy, and I encourage you to send in clips to help promote the comics you love as often as you can. There are thousands of items and previews each and every month, and it's easy for things to get lost in the shuffle. Now, as always, we'll be starting at the beginning of previews and working our way to the back. Obviously, we're not going to go item by item or page by page or even publisher by publisher. We're just going to hit the highlights, and the highlights are picked by listeners like you. So with that, let's get going. My first pick of the month is on page 26 of the previews catalog, and you guessed it is the previews catalog, this time for December 2020. Wow, this year's already going by reasonably fast, despite how long it's been. I'm a big fan of the previews catalog. I think it's been even more important this year than ever before, just as things are getting rescheduled, delayed, resolicited, all that kind of stuff. Now, between previews, Marvel previews, and stuff like that, we still don't get everything. You gotta go over to that DC Connect, which is a free digital publication, to go find out what DC's doing. But by and large, previews is your one-stop shop to figure out what's going to be happening in the coming months for comics. So I think it's worth getting, even if you don't want to pay for the catalog. You can find all this information on previewsworld.com, and I think it's well worth checking out. So once again, that's the previews catalog on page 26 of the previews catalog.
This is Marvin, also known as Viking Joker, on the Slack and the forums, although I primarily spend my time on Slack, talking about Reckless, an original graphic novel from Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. You'll find that in Image on page 32. This is the first of three original graphic novels in this storyline from these two artists that I love. I mean, they've been putting out stuff together for quite some time. All of their criminal stuff is amazing. Most recently, they put out Pulp, which is also awesome. My Heroes Have Always Been Junkies is a great standalone story that you can get out in hardcover or trade paperback right now. Jacob Phillips is also helping on the art duties. That's Sean's son. He's currently drawing That Texas Blood from Image. So if you get a chance, check out that series as well, because it's also very well done. It's really early in its run, so you can probably pick everything up if you look hard enough. This is going for $24.99, and I'm sure you can get it cheaper if you pre-order it somewhere. I don't want to mention any names. Cowabunga. It's got several luminaries here, from Patton Oswalt to Joe Hill, giving props to them for their efforts. And I don't think I quite fit in the same echelon as Joe Hill or Patton Oswalt, but they also have my love. So you should check it out. There's a couple of previews pages in here after page 32. Like I said, it's the first of three, so it's a good jumping on point if you want to check out this series. One thing about this that's a little different than what they've done in the past is they tend to write about the bad guys. This one actually is written about a good guy. It's a very funny title because it's called Reckless, and it's about a character named Ethan Reckless. It's a little nail on the head, probably, but you know what? I'm good with that. You know, it'll be fun. You should just check it out. Like I said, they've not disappointed me yet, so the art looks amazing on these previews pages, and I'm all in. You know, this is one of three, but I will be getting them all.
Hey, this is James back for the preview spotlight for October for things that I think are coming out in December. I could be getting that wrong, but I'm pretty sure. Yeah, no, it says December on the spine. Okay, normally I always pick the first thing that comes out in Image Comics. So I'm going to, you know, throw a monkey wrench in the gears here. And actually, I'm going to pick the second thing that I saw in the Image section. It's on page 36, and it is Post-Americana writer Steve Scroggie, and the artist is Steve Scroggie and Dave Stewart. The thing that I wanted to let you guys know, the reason why this stood out to me, I know Steve worked on Maestros for Image, which I really enjoyed. It was about, I'm trying to remember exactly, but it was like magical stuff and a whole empire and this guy who was supposed to be the leader of it. Anyways, it was kind of a cool book. And then he also was the artist for Brian K. Vaughan when he did We Stand on Guard. And I just really kind of fell in love with his art there. He's really detailed in line work. It's not super photorealistic, but he puts a lot of detail into his drawings. So there's like, let's see, one, two, three preview pages here with about one, two, three, four pages of art. So it definitely looks kind of cool. Now, I'm going to read you the solicit. The reason why is because I can't tell you why I like this comic without telling you what it's about. But it says it's Mad Max Fury Road meets Snowpiercer. Okay, the Cheyenne Mountain installation, a.k.a. the Bubble. And Cheyenne Mountain, by the way, is where we do have a base inside of there. That's where NORAD is. Colorado Springs, where Mike Myers lives, and I actually used to live there. No, I think Mike's, yeah, he's in Colorado Springs, I think. Okay, in the most sophisticated super bunker in the world, it was built to ensure the survival of America's executive branch of government and its most important citizens should the unthinkable happen. When the world ended, the executive branch failed to reach the sanctuary, but the elite citizenry did. 80 years later, one of their own has named himself the new president of the United States. His plans subjugate the survivors of the American wasteland using the same bunker resources meant to rebuild it. The only thing standing in their way is a deadly wasteland girl hell-bent on revenge. So it just sounds and looks like it's going to be a cool read. It's not going to be a very long one because it's only 6 issues. So if you're not into the single issues and following a story in single issues, I'm sure there'll be a trade immediately after this is done. Probably less expensive than the singles. But I'm going to pick it up in singles because if we don't buy singles, we don't support the trades and they may never come out one day. So on to my next pick.
This is Nick with a pick for the main previews catalog. It's from page 40, so this is in the Image section. And I wasn't going to record on this, but actually just flipping through the previews catalog again today, I caught this one. It's Homesick Pilots number 1. Writer is Diana Waters and artist Casper Weingard. And set for $3.99 release this December, described as a horror action and adventure series, and you'll see from the solicitation text here kind of what the gist might be. It says, in the summer of 1994, a haunted house walks across California. Inside is Amy, lead singer of a high school punk band who's been missing for weeks. How did she get there? And what do these ghosts want? Expect 3-chord songs and big bloody action that's Power Rangers meets The Shining. Yes, really. And in case you want just a little bit more demographic targeting here, they've got a little note that says, a clique of rebellious teens like in Paper Girls pitted against the evil intentions of a haunted house to rival that of The Haunting of Hill House. So, obviously, they're trying to target pretty much a broad range of people who have interest in just about anything from the Power Rangers to The Haunting of Hill House. But what really catches my attention here is the preview art, which really looks very nice. And Casper was the artist on Peter Cannon Thunderbolt, which was out, I believe, sometime back in 2019. And definitely got that kind of purple, pink, bluish vibe to a lot of the comics today. And I don't know, could be pretty interesting. The preview art definitely looks so, and the solicitation has me kind of intrigued, so I'm curious to give this one a try, at least to see what the series might be like. This is Nick with another pick from the Image section of the main previews catalog, this time from page 44, and this is a series I'm sad to see go, but ending with issue number 27 is Gideon Falls, by Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino. And this duo has made some really great comics over the last, 5-10 years or whatever, including the Joker Killer Smile most recently over there at DC. this Gideon Falls series, and of course the Old Man Logan series, which was going for a while there at Marvel. And so ending this December, this is going to be an 80-page, mind-bending conclusion, according to the solicitation. It's $7.99, so unfortunately, no cheap way out for the 80 pages. We're paying for each and every one of them. But it says here, the mind-bending conclusion to the Eisner Award-winning series by New York Times bestselling writer Jeff Lemire and artist Andrea Sorrentino, with the talents of Eisner Award-winning colorist Dave Stewart. So, you know, awards to go all the way around. An oversized 80-page giant of a story where all the universes of Gideon Falls finally converge. Can the combined forces of this ragtag band of adventurers be enough to stop the Laughing Man and his limitless legions of evil? And honestly, if you would have told me that the series would have gone in this particular direction when it first started, I never would have guessed. I was hooked in by the creative team and kind of the horror vibe that was being given off at the time. And while I'm still catching up on the last few issues of this series, it's taken some fun twists and turns along the way. And I think if you haven't checked it out, go back to issue number one, read it from the beginning, and I don't think you'll be too disappointed.
Hey, this is James back with another pick. And this time I'm in the image section, and it's actually not a new series that's starting. It's not even a comic book. It's a trade. And it's on page 47. John and I, a long time ago when we were doing the weekly comic spotlight, we reviewed the first episode of Stealth. And I had not pre-ordered it. I had not picked it up because Mike Costa was kind of like, I could read him. I can, you know, it's like, read some of the stuff and enjoy it. And some of the stuff I didn't enjoy is kind of so-so. And I'm like, I don't need to read any more superhero stuff. I'm getting plenty of that in Marvel and DC. So I kind of passed on this. But when we reviewed it, I really enjoyed it. So now that the trade is coming out December 9th, and it's 128 pages for $16.99, I'm really thinking about picking it up, and I'm pretty sure I'll get a nice discount from Cowabunga off that $16.99. Now, Mike Costa is the writer. Artist is Nate Bellegarde. I'll tell you about the first issue. There's a nice twist in there about a character who kind of disappeared and kind of shows up. Stuff happens. Maybe he's turned bad. He attacks the police. But there's a real big twist in there. And I really want to see how this plays out because the twist neither John and I saw coming. And it's something that I'm not... If you read the solicit, it's going to ruin it. But I don't want to say it in here on this recording. But I think the father's health plays a key into this story. And you may think the story's going one way and then it goes another way. Is the son picking up the torch for his dad? Anyways, I'm not going to give this stuff away, but there's a nice twist in there. It was kind of fun. I might ask some people on the Slack if they enjoyed it, if they actually picked it up. But I don't think that many people probably did pick it up because it was kind of an obscure title. Now, one thing that I don't like, I know everyone says, hey, Image, you know, is a creator-owned thing, creator-owned books, creator-owned this. But this one, it's creator-owned, but it's not owned by the creators, you would think. The creators are basically work for hire. Mike Costa and Nate Bellegarde and Tamara Bovelin, I'm butchering these names, are not the owners of this. And their names are on the cover. Their names are everywhere. It's a Skybound book, but it says at the bottom, created by Robert Kirkman and Mike Silvestri. Either there's a typo there or they did this as work for hire, which they have done sometimes at Image where the big founders just hire guys and they're like, hey, create this book for us. And they pay them a flat fee and they get the profits from it. So it might be something that they're trying to do that way. But then, you know, it kind of goes against the whole creators and we're for creators. But whatever. Check it out if it sounds like something you think would be cool. On to my next pick. Hey, this is James with another pick. And this one is one that I'm going to be double dipping on. And I'm going to shout it out to John. I don't know if he's a double dipper, but John, you might want to double dip here. This was our book of 2019 when we did the year in review. And it is on page 48, Skyward Hardcover by Joe Henderson. And Lee Gabbett is the artist, and Antonio Fabella is the artist also. One thing I'll tell you about this, Joe Henderson is the showrunner for the TV show Lucifer. Originally, it started off on network TV. I think it was on Fox. I honestly can't remember. But now it went over to Netflix to finish up the last few seasons of it. It was a good series. But what happened here is Joe Henderson, maybe as a comic fan, he went and created Skyward here. And it reads so episodic, like a TV show that I would love to read or a movie I'd love to watch. And Skyward was something that was just a wonderful story. You go to a world with no gravity, and you see this young girl go through trauma, some tragedy, losing some family members. And you get to see a lot of world building, you know, a world with no gravity. People don't just float off into space. I mean, you could if you jumped high enough. But, you know, the way storms interact, the way it affects bugs, the way that people have to live, have to exercise, and is there a cure? You know, what created this gravity, you know, this lack of gravity on the planet? So it's kind of cool. And it says it also features a brand new epilogue with all new art and story at the end. So I don't know what they're putting in here. But I'm like, cool, they're going to give me some more stuff inside of this hardcover. You are getting 416 pages for $39.99, which is not overpriced, because once again, I'm going to get probably 40% off at Cowabunga. So I'm going to pay $24 for 416 pages. That's a steal. And it's a hardcover too, which means, you know, trade paperbacks, the pages get all bent up and eh. So this is definitely something I would pick up. And if you haven't read Skyward, I would highly recommend it. You can go back and listen to the Weekly Comic Spotlight, because John and I reviewed probably at least a couple issues, if not three of them, because we both enjoyed it so much. So on to my next pick.
Hey, it's Marvin again. I didn't plan ahead when I recorded my last clip, but as I skip forward a few pages on page 49 of the image section, I also find That Texas Blood, Volume 1, ties into my last clip. This is a book by Chris Condon and Jacob Phillips. Jacob Phillips being Sean Phillips' son from the Brubaker Phillips marriage relationship connection? I'm out of words. Anyway, Jacob Phillips comes from a lineage of artistry, and his art is amazing. I haven't read this entire series yet, just because I don't have all of the issues. This trade collects 1 through 6 of that series, which is a relatively new series. You can probably go out and find the single issues if you want it. However, if trades are your jam, then you're going to want to check this one out, because it puts it all together for you, and it's pretty awesome. This is the story of Joe Bob Coates, the sheriff of a small Texas town, and talks about some crazy stuff happening down there in Texas. You should check it out. I, as I mentioned, don't have the whole story, so I can't really, and I wouldn't, spoil anything for you, but I don't know how it all turns out, but I've enjoyed, I think, the 3 or 4 issues I've already read, so give it a shot.
This is Nick with another pick from the image section of the main previews catalog on page 56. Again, on the topic of hidden surprises, this was a series that I was actually very surprised at after reading issue 1 kind of on a whim, and that is Big Girls number 5. I just got Big Girls issue number 2 this last week and haven't gotten around to reading it. But after I read issue 1, I went back and did a special order to catch the 2nd and 3rd and 4th issues before they came out. This is written and drawn, I guess, or fully illustrated by Jason Howard, who had done Trees and, oh, I forget what the Cemetery Beach, I think, was the name of the other series where he was the artist, like with Warren Ellis or somebody like that. And so this time he's telling his own story, and this is the one with the men who turn into these giant monsters for some reason, and the women with giant traits who have to take them down, and really just a fun concept with really nice art, and I'm curious to see where this one keeps going. $3.99 out in December, and it says here from the solicitation, Gulliver's plan is revealed, and it might mean war. Okay, it does mean war, and Ember has to decide which side to fight for. Not everyone escapes unchanged. So, obviously, some plot twists between issue number 1 and number 5, so I'm curious to see where things are headed, and hopefully the series is continuing along to be a nice one.
Hey, this is James back with another pick and image, and this is not a number one, not a new series. It's on page 59, and it is Department of Truth, number 4, by James Tynion and Martin Simons. Simmons or Simons is the artist. The art in here is definitely not photorealistic, so if you're going for that, it's definitely very abstract, very obscure. It doesn't bother me, it doesn't take away from the story, but it's different than most comics you're going to read, very indie. James Tynion can be a great writer, and I think this is a great title for him. Department of Truth, basically we find I'm trying to remember if it was a reporter. It's a little bit murky. I read the first issue a while back. But it is a reporter who kind of a person who gets picked up after he's gone and was kind of like a mole for like the FBI and going to these flat earth conventions, you know, people with these weird conspiracy theories, you know, a bunch of nut jobs is what we would call them, you know, people who go and they sit there and they say, oh, Oswald didn't kill JFK, oh, the earth isn't flat, you name it, we all see conspiracy theories. This is the era of people don't want to listen to the news, so they go to social media and they rant and say fake news. And they get information from Facebook and Twitter and not reputable, legitimate news sources. I always tell people, if you don't trust the news in the United States, go to BBC. You can read it. There's news. But what's funny about this with the Department of Truth is it's kind of like a different take on it, because as more and more people buy into the flat earth hoax conspiracy, it starts to become true. So what people, the masses, believe is what becomes reality is basically the premise of this. And they talk about the effect of what causes that. And I don't want to go into that, but it almost is around the thing that we all know about. History is written by basically the people that won. If we went back and we read history of the pilgrims and people, the Europeans coming to the United States from the viewpoint of the Native Americans, history would read very differently than the American history we read today. Or if you read it from the perspective of the Vikings when they still worshipped Thor and Odin, when the Christians were coming in to Christianize them, it would be just a different history if you could see that. But they did not win. History was written by the conquerors or by the people who were the winners of the outcome. And so history is written that way. Same thing with Department of Truth. Whatever people are believing and the masses of people believe in becomes the truth to the people. So that's what Tynion's writing about. It's kind of like some heady stuff. And there's actually a name for it. And for the life of me, I can't remember what it was. But it was kind of a cool, trippy read. And I think people will enjoy it. If you think that it's too far gone with the first 4 issues out, I would say check in with Eric from Cowabunga. He might be able to get you caught up. And if he can't, I'm sure that in 2 months there'll be a trade being solicited, and then you can jump on at the next point. But it's definitely something that if that sounds like it's in your wheelhouse, it's a trippy head game, conspiracy fun story. So on to my next pick.
This is Nick with another pick from the image section of the main previews catalog, this time from page number 62. It's another issue of Ice Cream Man, this time number 22, with writer, as always, W. Maxwell Prince, and artists Martin Marazzo and Chris O'Halloran. And this anthology horror series has been pretty enjoyable all along. You know, most issues seem to tell kind of something to make you think or tell something gruesome along the way. And in this case, the story is titled Advent Calendar, and it just says every day is a gift. So kind of fitting for the month of December, and I'm curious to see how that plays into it at all. But it's a fun little cover there with our spider coming out of the chimney of a advent calendar and a centipede and a little skeleton Santa Claus. So looks pretty interesting. And if you're in for some of the variant covers on this particular series, the cover B is by Sam Wolf Connolly, and it shows like three scoop sundae in a bowl with blood being dripped down on it. So, like I said, kind of gruesome at times, but if you're into it, it's been pretty enjoyable.
Hi, I'm Billy Hogan, host of the Superman Fan Podcast, and I go by Superman Fan on the forums, and my first pick comes from the Dark Horse section on page 85 with You Look Like Death, Tales of the Umbrella Academy number 4 of 6, written by Gerard Way and Sean Simon, story art by I.N.J. Culbard, cover A by Gabriel Ba, cover B by I.N.J. Culbard, and cover C by James Herron. The Hollywood gods reveal why the once famous Vivian Clark was blacklisted, and Kloss sees a side of Vivian that scares even him. Business is booming at the Underground Vampire Amusement Park. Funhouse mirrors don't really work for the undead, but the Bobbing for Apples in Blood station is a hit. The vampire chimp boss discovers that Kloss could serve him better alive than dead. End shops on December 23rd for $3.99. I've been a big fan of the Umbrella Academy ever since its first miniseries, and I also enjoyed the Umbrella Academy Netflix series, which now has posted its second season, which I haven't watched yet. I just received the first issue of this miniseries, but I haven't had time to read it yet, so I can't wait to begin reading You Look Like Death, Tales of the Umbrella Academy, number 4 of 6.
Dr. Mo here with another pick for the preview spotlight episode. It's The Orville, number 4, subtitled Heroes, Part 2 of 2. Dark Horse continues its mini-series of two-part Orville storylines, which, in my opinion, is that each part, parts 1 and 2, essentially comprise an episode of the show. The solicitation for this is, like, really off-kilter, and I'm not sure what to infer from it. And since part one has not come out and is not slated to come out until November, I don't really have a backstory. To be perfectly frank, don't really care. The fact that this comic, The Orville, is coming out is enough for me. The series is written by David Goodman, who is one of the executive producers on the show. Goodman wrote the Orville miniseries, or series of miniseries, two-part series that came out last year. They were all very enjoyable. They very much fit the tone of the series. They really did feel like episodes of the Orville, but in comic book form, because you have a much bigger budget for more action, more weirder aliens, and so forth. And one of the reasons why I picked this is because, as a fan of the Orville, we're not sure when we're getting the next season. Folks were hoping that we would get it sometime this year. It had moved from Fox to Hulu. And I read an article recently in which they're not really sure when the third season will be completed, because they were in the midst of filming when coronavirus hit, coupled with the fact that the show's creator and the captain, quote unquote captain of the Orville, Seth MacFarlane, has a new deal with NBC Universal to develop shows. I'm certain we'll get the Orville back on our screens at some point. Can't wait for that day to happen, but in the meantime, I have these Dark Horse series to tide me over. The artwork for all of these issues have been provided by David Cabeza. He really does a good job of capturing the feel of the crew, the ship. He really does a great job of bringing this to life. Can't say anything else, but I just love this creative team. I just love these series. And really do hope that Dark Horse continues to publish subsequent Orville two-parters, because I really do also like this format. It's really cool because you can kind of get in and out of a story. You get part one and then part two of a story, then you move on to the next story, and you know it's and then it's, you know, you get a sequence about four issues that comprises two stories. You're done. You move on. Can't say anything more about it. The Orville, number 4, Heroes, part 2 of 2, can be found on page 91 of the previews catalog and costs $3.99.
Billy Hogan again. My next pick is still in the Dark Horse Comics section on page 92 with Barb Alien, Red Planet, number 2 of 5. Written by Tate Brombal, art and cover A by Gabriel Hernandez-Walta, and cover B by Kevin Koch. With a borrowed face, shape-shifting Martian hero Barbalian explores the gay night scene and a buried part of himself. But his fractured identity takes another hit when he comes into conflict with his new friends, his fellow police officers, and the murderous lunatic who followed him to Earth. End shops on December 16th for $3.99. If you're not familiar with the Dark Horse universe of characters, Barb Alien is kind of a version of Martian Manhunter, the DC hero from the planet Mars. As I've often said on my many clips about the Black Hammer universe of characters, I really enjoy them, so I can't wait to read Barb Alien, Red Planet, number 2 of 5. Billy Hogan again. Not only is my next pick also from the Dark Horse section, it's also on page 92 as well, with Colonel Weird Cosmagogue, number 3 of 4, written by Jeff Lemire. Art and cover A by Tyler Cook, and cover B by Mike Spicer. Forced by cosmic powers to watch eternity unfold simultaneously, a dazed Colonel Weird wanders dazed through the counterculture of the 60s, his own origins, and a murder investigation, struggling to find a way out of the pattern. In shops December 30th for $3.99. Colonel Weird is an analog of the DC science fiction hero Adam Strange, and is also a part of the Black Hammer universe. I'm really enjoying this take on a science fiction hero.
Hey, this is James back with another pick. Dark Horse seems to have been struggling with some of their output, just losing a lot of licensed things, and I think the coronavirus shutdown kind of hit them hard. So I did want to shout one thing out from Dark Horse, and this one is on page 93, and that is The World of Black Hammer Library Edition Volume 2 Hardcover. I did not pick up The World of Black Hammer, the first Library Edition, but I'm going to check with Eric and see if I can, if it's still available. One thing I wanted to tell you is Black Hammer is kind of, well, it's a really cool series. What essentially happened is Jeff Lemire has been given free reign to create. Originally, he started with Black Hammer, with these characters stuck in this little pocket universe, not able to get back to their world. And we learned a lot about them, not being able to age, not being able to change. It was really kind of a cool concept. There's some cursing and some off-putting things. It's a little bit more mature title, so if that offends you, you don't want to read this title. But then, as it became more and more popular, they came out of the library collecting all that info. Then they came out with The World of Black Hammer, and with The World of Black Hammer, they allowed at Dark Horse other writers to kind of expand on the lore within the universe. When I say other writers, a lot of them are still by Jeff Lemire. You got Colonel Weird, the Cosmagog, that's coming out by Jeff Lemire as the writer. But you have Barbalian that's coming out, who the writer is Tate Bromby. I don't know his name. And the writer, co-writer is Jeff Lemire. But Jeff Lemire is definitely the director. This is his world that he's created. The closest thing I could liken it to would be like an Astro City. He's creating his own little superhero universe. So what this, the world of Black Hammer number two is, it's Jeff Lemire and Ray Fox as the writer. And there's a whole litany of artists. I'm not going to read them all off. But it does collect the Quantum Age and Black Hammer 45 in a deluxe oversized hardcover format with a new cover, sketchbook extras, and more. And this has a very, what I would call a Golden Age feel, but yet like an alternative Golden Age feel. Because it's Golden Age heroes, but it's not the we're good, we're right Superman Boy Scout type stuff. It's Golden Age where you get a character who may swear sometimes. So it's a little bit different that way. But I've been having a lot of fun with it. I've read pretty much everything in singles that's come out, so I might as well pick up these libraries if they're still available. So I'm going to check with Eric on those, but if this is in your wheelhouse, check this out. On to my next pick.
Dr. Mo here with a pick for the preview spotlight episode. It's Batman Catwoman, number one from DC Comics. So Tom King is back after a long hiatus, which was honestly about a year. And to be fair, we've had so many Batman titles in the meantime. Would we have really noticed this? So in doing King's run on Batman, one of the biggest storylines, if not the biggest storyline, was the relationship between Bruce and Selina. Now, we all know how issue 50 turned out, the non-wedding of Batman and Catwoman. But I really have to say that when Tom King was writing about the romance, the relationship between Bruce and Selina, I was there for it. I enjoyed the double date issue between Lois and Clark. I enjoyed the Bachelor, Bachelorette issues. When King focused on a relationship, the romance of the two being together, I think he excelled. One of the reasons I'm interested in this title, in addition to King further exploring and hopefully deepening this relationship between Bruce and Selina, is the inclusion of a character I really enjoyed from the Batman animated series universe. I'm also intrigued by the fact that this is considered a Black Label title. We're not even really sure what continuity at DC means these days. So my feeling is you buy something because you like it at this point. Hopefully the editors at least are communicating and that things are coherent, that there is some sort of coherent vision. But my hope for Batman Catwoman is that within Tom King's worldview of Batman, this series has some sort of internal consistency. We'll see. I'm just committed to buying the first issue or two, and I'll make a determination at that point whether or not I want to stick with this title for its 12 issues or not. Batman Catwoman number one can be found on page 2 of DC Connect and costs $4.99. Please note that it is a Black Label title.
My next pick is on page 21 of the DC Connect catalog. It is Generations Shattered number 1. This is an 80-page one-shot spinning out of what happened in Detective Comics 1027 and Dark Knight's Death Metal. And it's apparently going to tell us the generation-spanning history of the DC Universe. I don't know if this is what they're trying to salvage out of the generation stuff that got abandoned or if this is something else. Either way, I'm curious. I'm going to check it out. Hopefully it's pretty good. It may be, you know, a pivotal thing and where DC's going, it may not be, but only time will tell. It is $9.99. So if you can get it at a discount, I recommend it. Once again, it's Generations Shattered number one from DC on page 21 of the DC Connect catalog.
Dr. Mo here with another pick for the preview spotlight episode. It's Dark Knight's Death Metal, The Secret Origin, number one from DC Comics. So those of you who are following Dark Knight's Death Metal, you're definitely in for a bit more Dark Knights and definitely in for a bit more metal with the addition of that team of writers Scott Snyder and Jeff Johns. Yes, you heard me right. This book is supposed to be written by Scott Snyder and Jeff Johns. So expect a bit of craziness and perhaps some arms being ripped off because, you know, we're talking about the dark multiverse here. But all in all, you know, truly, I have been kind of hit and miss about these Dark Knight's Death Metal one-shots. My feeling has always been, if it's not written by the person who's written the main event series, I may or may not pick it up. Especially when you're talking these price points. Given that, you know, it's a full story that's written by Snyder and Jeff Johns. We know Jeff Johns, you know, has had his hands origin of the DC Universe. And going back to Doomsday Clock and DC Rebirth number one, I have this feeling based on there was an article posted in my Newsarama that kind of explains that this is going to delve into the full history of the DC Universe. I have the feeling that you're gonna get Dark Knight, Dark Knight's Metal meeting Doomsday Clock, and we're finally gonna have this stuff align, which has been talked about for years. Because if you remember correctly, when Doomsday Clock was supposed to end, originally that was going to be sort of reset things for the DC Universe. And Scott Snyder over the years has given these interviews saying that, you know, that they were trying to align things. So perhaps this is it. Who knows? I'm definitely along for this ride. We've got artists lined up, like Jerry Ordway will be contributing to this book. Love Jerry Ordway. Curious to see where it goes. Now, the one thing that will probably scare people away from this title is that $5.99 price point. So, you know, if you got some holiday money coming in, save your pennies. Yeah, it looks like December's going to be very expensive, certainly, when it comes to Dark Knight's Death Metal. But I'm definitely in for this series. The pedigree alone makes it very interesting. And again, we're going to see if we're finally going to get that collision of Doomsday Clock, DC Universe / Dark Knight's Universe. See if those storylines are finally going to collide and it's going to make sense of things. Because in these solicitations, we've also noted that Dark Knight's Metal is coming to an end. So in January 2021, you know, we're going to have a whole new DC universe. And, you know, who knows? Perhaps this is, you know, the starting point for all that. Dark Knight's Death Metal, The Secret Origin, number one. That's certainly a tongue twister. Can be found on page 24 of DC Connect. And again, this thing costs $5.99.
My next pick is on page 29 of the DC Connect catalog. It is the Ginny Hex Special number 1. I've enjoyed this character over in Young Justice. I'd like to find out more about her. So, hey, we're getting a special, so why not check that out? It's a 48-page one-shot, and hopefully it'll give us some good backstory on the character and what she's all about. So once again, it's the Ginny Hex Special number 1 on page 29 of the DC Connect catalog. My next pick is on page 30 of the DC Connect catalog. It is Tales from the Dark Multiverse, Crisis on Infinite Earths, number 1. Now, I'll be honest, I'm not a huge fan of the dark multiverse and all that stuff, but I am a huge fan of Crisis on Infinite Earths, and this thing has a bunch of Earth 2 references. It's got Jay Garrick and Alan Scott there on the cover. It's mentioning, you know, Jor-El of Earth 2 and whatnot. So I'm curious what's going on with the JSA and all that stuff here. Even if it's just for a 48-page one-shot, I'm going to check it out. Hopefully it'll be pretty good. And hopefully it's a sign that they're going to, you know, go back to some stuff that they'd kicked to the curb a while back, i.e. Earth 2 and the JSA characters. They're starting to bring them back, and, you know, I'm clamoring for as much as I can get of it. So once again, that's Tales from the Dark Multiverse, Crisis on Infinite Earths, number 1, from DC on page 30 of the DC Connect catalog.
Hi, this is Todd Cassell from Phoenix, Arizona, with my first pick in the catalog and my first pick since all the quarantining happened in March. Actually, I haven't been away because of the quarantining. What I mentioned back then is I've been away because my comic book store, they retired. And so I've, for the first time ever, gone to ordering my comic books online through an online service since then. And because of that, I don't receive my previews catalog, which I love to go through, until after the due date for these recordings. So I've been a little, you know, slack in submitting anything, even though I know you can go online to look for things. But to me, jumping around online to look up things from the catalog in advance is, you know, confuses me. But DC, now that they've got the catalog, has gone all online with the DC Connect, quote-unquote, magazine, that one is easy for me to get to. So for now, I've got a couple of DC submissions, and then I'll figure it out down the road. I do love going through the previews catalog, but unfortunately, I can't go through it quickly enough because of my online ordering. So anyway, my first pick is on page 49 and 50 of the catalog. It's actually the Superman duo of books written by Brian Michael Bendis, Action Comics number 1028 and Superman number 28. And why am I picking this? Well, number one, I love Superman. I am a big Superman fan all my life since I was a kid. Yeah, I was a Marvel kid. But of the DC heroes, all my friends love Batman. Oh, Batman cool, Batman cool. But I like more the science fiction-y type stuff, and so Superman was always cool for me. The big boy scout. Brian Michael Bendis, he's a fun writer. I've enjoyed him for many, many years. And when he came onto Superman, I thought, okay, this will be interesting, but I'm just not sure about it. And well, now I see that it says that this is going to be these are going to be the final books of the run for these creative teams for both of these books. I think that means it's the final Brian Michael Bendis Superman books for Action and Superman as well. I think that's what I've been hearing, so I assume that that's correct. So I just wanted to say a goodbye to Brian Michael Bendis on these two books, but also say I haven't really loved them. I like Bendis, but I guess I don't think he fits Superman. Especially spoilers, especially when he had him unveil his identity. Okay, yeah, interesting concept. I hope that goes away someday, just like comic book world does things like that. But I don't think he really did anything with it. I don't think it was dramatic. There just hasn't been an oomph to the Superman books under Brian Michael Bendis. I think the books with what's her name, the Red Mist, and the new owner of the Daily Planet. Anyway, so why am I recommending these? Well, I recommend them because it's Superman. I recommend them because I have faith that Brian Michael Bendis will find some way to wrap it up if these are truly wrap-ups of him on the books. I'm interested in seeing who the new writer will be because I am a writer person. I do love artists, but when comic books world comes to my front door, writing is what's key. So I've been babbling on for a while, since it's the first time I have babbled in 6 months or more. So anyway, I'm not going to read the solicits. You guys can do that. It's on page 49 and 50 of the DC Connect catalog, Action Comics 1028 and Superman 28, and likely the farewell of Brian Michael Bendis. So why not buy that? Go Superman!
Billy Hogan again. My next pick this time comes from the DC Connect online magazine on page 49 with Action Comics number 1028, written by Brian Michael Bendis, story and cover artist John Romita Jr. and Klaus Janson, cardstock variant by Raphael Grandpa, and Wonder Woman 84 cardstock variant by Frank Cho. On sale December 22nd for $3.99 for 32 pages, and the cardstock variants are $4.99. The powerhouse creative team of Brian Michael Bendis, John Romita Jr., and Klaus Janson wrap up their run on Action Comics with House of Kent Epilogue. With the final fate of Metropolis's underworld revealed at last, it's time for each member of the House of Kent to face their unknown futures head-on, including Lois, Connor, John, Kara, Jimmy, and, of course, Clark. This standalone Superman story connects threads from Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen, Lois Lane, Superman, Justice League, Legion of Superheroes, and other unforgettable series in epic and unexpected ways. I've enjoyed Brian Michael Bendis' run on Action Comics for the most part. A few of the storylines may have dragged on a bit, and I have to admit I wasn't crazy about how the Leviathan storyline ended in Action, but I was pleasantly surprised that I enjoyed his accelerated aging of John Kent. What sold me on that development was when he became a member of the Legion of Superheroes. So I'm pretty confident that I'm going to enjoy the wrap-up of Bendis and John Romita Jr.'s run on Action Comics with issue number 1028. Billy Hogan again. My next pick is still in the DC Connect online magazine, on page 50 with Superman, number 28, written by Brian Michael Bendis, art and cover by Ivan Reis and Joe Prado, cardstock variant cover by Kale Nagoo, and pardon me if I mispronounce that name, and Wonder Woman 84 variant cover by Gabriel Delotto, on sale December 15th for $3.99 for 32 pages, and the cardstock variants are $4.99. It's the Man of Steel's last stand in this final Superman tale by the superstar team of Brian Michael Bendis, Ivan Reis, and Joe Prado. Superman comes face to face with an alien race that he desperately wants to help before it's too late, as the cosmically powered race known as the Sinmar aim their deadly power at the Man of Steel's adopted planet. Superman finds himself pushed past anything he has ever faced. Get ready to experience a powerhouse moment for Superman that's been years in the making. Among the storylines in the Superman title, I think I've enjoyed the Invisible Mafia storyline the best, and I look forward to seeing how he wraps up his time on the Superman title with issue number 28.
Hi, John. This is Nick Fenner with a pick from the DC Connect catalog. This is going to be from page 53, if I can read the tiny... Nope, 51. It's Batman Beyond number 50, written by Dan Jurgens, with art by Sean Chen and Sean Parsons, and a cover by Dan Mora. This is the final issue of Dan Jurgens' iconic run on Batman Beyond, according to the solicitation. So after beginning with the short run before this one, back in 2015 and then running kind of through the Rebirth era and beyond, Dan Jurgens will have actually written 66 issues of Batman Beyond. So definitely an accomplishment for someone in this era of comic books. And I'll just read the solicitation here for anyone who maybe has been waiting until the final issue to pick up and follow along. It says, of course, the finale on Batman Beyond finds Terry McGinnis accused of crimes he didn't commit when one of his greatest rogues, the Formidable Inc., poses as Batman and causes havoc around Gotham City. Wonder Woman will stop by to confront Batman Beyond. Will Terry be able to convince her that he's innocent, or will he find himself the enemy of one of the DC Universe's greatest heroes? The epic conclusion of the series is here. Now, I fell in love with the Batman Beyond concept back in the day when I was watching all the Saturday morning cartoons and probably watching reruns of the X-Men from the 90s, as well as all the new stuff, and the Batman Beyond and Batman Adventures. And so I've always had a soft spot for this particular character in the comic books, and I think the recent run has been fairly good to the character and told some interesting stories in the Neo-Gotham setting. And so, for sure, if you've been following along with this series, it's worth following it through to the end with a nice issue number 50, priced at only $3.99. So check that out this December.
Billy Hogan again. My next pick is still in the DC Connect online magazine on page 53 with Batman, The Adventure Continues, number 7 of 8. Written by Alan Burnett and Paul Denny. Art by Ty Templeton. Cover by Becky Noonan with a variant cover by Justin Erickson. On sale December 1st for $3.99 for 32 pages. The stage is set for Jason Todd's master plan. Batman must kill the Joker or Red Hood will kill Robin. Can Batman turn the tables on his boy Wonder, turn bad and save Tim Drake? Or will Batman finally put an end to the Clown Prince of Crime shenanigans? I've enjoyed this return to the Batman animated series universe, and I even collected the companion comic book title to that series. This current miniseries fits perfectly into that world, so I can't wait to read Batman The Adventure Continues number 7.
This is Nick with another pick from the DC Connect catalog on page 55. It's Catwoman number 28, written by Ram V and art by Fernando Blanco. And I like this writer and artist combination. I think Fernando Blanco does a great job with the kind of shadowy world that Catwoman lives in, and also does a great dynamic type of storytelling when it comes to action scenes and fight scenes. So happy to see that still the lineup here. And the solicitation says, apparently taking down the mob, straightening out some crooked cops, and gaining control of Alleytown is not enough for Selina. She's also taken it upon herself to make sure the streets of her newly appointed home are safe for the group of stray kids she's taken under her wing. And she's going to do it by teaching them to steal the streets back for themselves. Introducing Catwoman and the Strays. So I don't expect this to be the next big super team in comic books, but I feel like Catwoman having a team of stray teenagers is at least an interesting concept to explore for a little while. And I'm a little disappointed, in fact, that when they wrote this solicitation, they didn't find some kind of other creative cat-related way to say that she's taking these kids under her wings. So hopefully they, I don't know, find some more cat puns or something for the next time around. This will be $3.99, available on December 15th of this year.
Billy Hogan again. My next pick is still in the DC Connect online magazine on page 64 with Legion of Superheroes number 12. Written by Brian Michael Bendis, with art by Ryan Sook and Wade Von Graubadger, and cover by Ryan Sook, with a variant cover by Matt Taylor. on sale December 22nd for $3.99. The battle for New Krypton is on. This powerhouse issue features the Legion confronting the greatest challenge of any era, with New Krypton on the verge of destruction at the hands of one of John Kent's deadliest foes. The young hero may have to make the ultimate sacrifice to save his friends, his family, and his heritage. But it could lead to the start of a monumental new chapter in the future of the DC Universe. Long live the Legion! I was really glad when Brian Michael Bendis finally brought the Legion of Superheroes back. I think he's done an excellent job of updating the look of the Legionnaires so that they don't all look just like mostly Caucasians with a few different skin colors to bring a little variety. He makes the alien Legionnaires look even more alien. This is a maybe less experienced Legion than we've seen in the past. They're not as polished. They do make mistakes, but I think it's going to make it a fun series as we see them grow into their role as superheroes of the 31st century. Long live the Legion!
Now, my next pick is on page 73, and it's something that honestly I'm not getting because I've already got it. It's Crisis on Multiple Earths, Book 1, Crossing Over, trade paperback. Now, I love the JLA-JSA crossovers, and this is the starting of the history of the JLA-JSA crossovers, starting with that first one in Justice League of America's number 21 and 22. It then goes for issues 29 and 30, then 37 and 38, 46 and 47, 55 and 56, 64, 65, 73, 74, 76, and then 82 and 83. This was a roughly yearly kind of a thing that they did in the Justice League book, where they would just go team up with the JSA in some way, shape, or form, and either go fight the crime syndicate or some other group of villains or whatnot. This is some great classic stuff. I've got all six volumes of this trade paperback series already. This is something I've had on the list as a possibility for the back issue spotlight for a while, because each of these stories over time introduces another part of the DC multiverse. At one point, they deal with the Legion of Superheroes. Another time, the All-Star Squadron, or the New Gods, or the Freedom Fighters, or they fight the Crime Syndicate. Going through these, and granted, it would take a while to do that, there's just a ton of great DC stuff to be had here. And of course, there's tons of the JSA, which I love. So this is the first of at least six trades. There's a possible seventh that I think they released over in Germany, but not in the US, or not in English, which kind of sucks. I totally recommend these. Like I said, I'm not getting it because I've already got it, but great fun stuff. Once again, that's Crisis on Multiple Earths, Book 1, Crossing Over, trade paperback on page 73 of the DC Connect catalog.
It's Chris Brawley, a.k.a. Brawlinator, on the Slack channel and the forum, and my first pick for this month is the first of four collected editions that I'd like to spotlight. This is the DC Omnibus edition of Superman and Batman Generations. This collects three Elseworlds comic book limited series, all written and illustrated by the great John Byrne. Now, the main theme of this series is what's known as comic book time. And Byrne places Superman, Batman, and other members of the DC Universe in a single timeline showing the characters aging and being replaced by their progeny. If you're one of those comic book readers that enjoyed the recent Spider-Man Life story by Chip Zdarsky, this may be right in your wheelhouse. Back in 1996, Byrne wrote and illustrated another Elseworlds story where Batman and Captain America teamed up to fight the Joker and the Red Skull back in 1945. Now, the epilogue of that story showed Dick Grayson taking over the role of Batman, with Bruce Wayne Jr. taking on the name Robin, and it's from the epilogue of that comic that the Generations concept was spun off and later developed. This Superman-Batman Generations omnibus reprints all three series, which totals 20 issues, and I don't think the third series, which spans the final 12 issues, has ever been reprinted before. This series is fun, shocking, profound, dark, and ultimately heartwarming. John Byrne is at the top of his game here, and these Elseworld tales were all written between 1999 and 2004. So this collected edition gets my highest recommendation. You can check it out yourself on page 86 of DC Connect.
My next pick is also on page 86, and it's not something I'm getting, and Brawlinator's already talked about it, but I gotta give a shout out to Superman and Batman Generations Omnibus Hardcover. I think this is some of John Byrne's best out-of-continuity DC work. It's basically, again, following Batman and Superman if they had started back in the 30s and kind of aged real time, and we get generations of Batman and Superman over the years. It covers the first four-issue limited series, the second four-issue limited series, the third 12-issue limited series. It's some great stuff. I really enjoy it. It's another one I've thought about doing some back-issue spotlights on at some point, but it's really a good time to go pick up the Omnibus and stuff. It's some classic material if you love John Byrne and you love Batman and Superman. So once again, that's Superman Batman Generations Omnibus Hardcover on page 86 of the DC Connect catalog.
Speaking of Superman and John Byrne, over on page 88 of DC Solicits is my next pick. It's the Man of Steel Volume 2, which collects John Byrne's reinvention of Superman from the ground up following the Crisis on Infinite Earths event. Now, this second volume introduces the relationship between Superman and the Legion of Superheroes, and it collects Action Comics 588 through 593, Adventures of Superman 429 to 435, Legion of Superheroes 37 and 38, and Superman 5 through 11. There's even a few issues from DC's Who's Who update from 1987. Now that's 25 issues for $50 retail. I know you can probably find it cheaper through Cowabunga, DCBS, or whoever your favorite pre-order platform is. And if you ordered Volume 1 a couple of months ago, then you won't want to miss this hardcover collected edition. Look it over on page 88 of DC's Connect.
This is Nick with another pick from the DC Connect catalog on page 89. Back in the collected editions section, it is Swamp Thing, The Bronze Age, Volume 3, Trade Paperback. Now, I believe this was probably part of a hardcover omnibus that was released a while back, but I like collecting a lot of these series in their trade paperback form. And this should be the third volume and final volume of this particular series. It's the last of the Saga of the Swamp Thing issues that lead directly into the Alan Moore run, which is collected elsewhere. And so this is the last of those Bronze Age stories before that happened. And just to read the solicitation so you know it's included here, it says, "The saga of one of DC's most unique characters continues in this collection of horror comics classics. Swamp Thing takes on monsters, both human and inhuman, in these stories, including Anton Arcane and his unmen, and the sinister General Sunderland. Plus, adaptation of the Swamp Thing movie, and a reprint of the classic Swamp Thing tale that introduces the unmen, collects the Saga of the Swamp Thing numbers 6 through 19, and the Saga of the Swamp Thing Annual number 1. So we've got some writing here by Martin Pasco, Dan Mishkin, Len Wein, and Bruce Jones, and art by a host of the era's best artist at the time, Tom Yeats, Jan Durasama, Bo Hampton, Stephen Bissett, Bernie Wrightson, and Mark Texera. So check this out. It is going to be on sale for $29.99 in February, just at the beginning of February, 320 pages. So again, a little bit of an early solicitation there, but I'm looking forward to wrapping up my collection of Swamp Thing trade paperbacks with this particular issue.
Todd Cassell from Phoenix, Arizona, again with my last pick of the month. It's in the DC Connect catalog on page 94, and it's the Sandman audiobook. Now, this is cool. This is really cool. Okay, Sandman, the series, probably my all-time favorite comic book series. Yeah, I love the superhero books. I've been reading since I was a kid, and I'm now age years old, decades later. But still, Sandman is a great series. I know there's a lot of people who can't sludge through it, but I've already read through them twice when I originally purchased them all, and then in my various hardcover editions. Anyway, I love Sandman. Sandman audiobook, I know that Audible, people who have Audible may have already heard these. I don't have Audible, and I've been jealous when I heard about this, and I just got so excited when I turned the page of the virtual page of the DC Connect catalog, and I saw that they were selling an MP3 audio of the Sandman audiobook. And it's not just somebody reading I assume, well, we'll look at the solicit in a second, but I assume it's the initial storyline of Sandman, and it's not someone just reading the book like any audiobook. It's with some really good actors in there. Riz Ahmed, Kat Dennings, Taron Egerton, Neil Gaiman is the narrator, James McAvoy. Who else is in here? Samantha Morton, B.B. Newworth, Andy Serkis, Michael Sheen. I assume they're acting out their lines. I don't know what to expect. I just expect something really good because I've been hearing a lot of buzz about this audiobook, and I just can't wait for it to land on my doorstep. So what is it? Well, the audiobook it's an MP3, and I use that to download onto my good old-fashioned iPod Classic for when I go for my long walks. I listen to audiobooks all the time, so this is perfect for my long walks. So what does it have? Oh, gee, it's got stickers, too. Come on, stickers! What Los Angeles Times Magazine called the greatest epic in the history of comic books is here as a first-ever audio production from Audible and DC. The Sandman is a global phenomenon, wrapping you in a dark literary world of fantasy and horror based on the New York Times best-selling series, written by acclaimed storyteller Neil Gaiman and adapted by Dirk Maggs. It comes to life on audio with a powerhouse all-star cast of 68 narrators and a cinematic original music soundscape. Oh, that's cool. By the British Academy Award winner James Hannigan. In an exciting twist, Neil Gaiman himself serves as the narrator. This first installment of The Sandman adapts volumes 1 through 3 of the graphic novel series and is based on characters. Well, that sounds great. That means there'll be more installments. I'll be there. Anyway, I recommend this, and I haven't heard a second of it. Have a good month, everybody. Hopefully, I'll talk to you next month.
Billy Hogan again. My next pick this time comes in the IDW section on page 126 with Yosagi Ujimbo number 16. The writer, cover, and story artist is Stan Sakai. A new band of Tengu mountain goblins have invaded the northern mountains, a species new to Yosagi. Savage and relentless, they are determined to drive the established Tengu out and prey upon the people of the area. For the first time, Yosagi must ally himself with yokai to keep the invaders out. Ends shops December 23rd for $3.99. What appeals to me in Yosagi Ujimbo is that through anthropomorphic characters, Stan Sakai explores his Japanese history, folklore, and culture. It's a nice change from the typical superhero comic book, so I would recommend Yosagi Ujimbo number 16. Billy Hogan again. Not only is my next pick still in the IDW section, it's also on page 126 with Yosagi Ujimbo Wanderer's Road number 2 of 6. Writer and story artist Stan Sakai, with a cover artist, Peach Nomoko. A mother's love. In this classic tale, Yosagi befriends an elderly woman whose son turns out to be a villain who brings misery to the entire village. The bonds of family and honor are tested as Yosagi must make an impossible choice. End shops December 30th for $3.99. Having come to Yosagi Ujimbo late in its run from Dark Horse Comics, I'm glad that IDW is reprinting some of the earliest Usagi stories so that latecomers like me can catch up, and they're working on collecting and republishing Usagi's earlier stories, as well as the current IDW Usagi series. So if you like comic books that explore a different culture than America or whatever country you're living in, I would recommend any comic book from Usagi Yojimbo and creator and writer and artist Stan Sakai. Billy Hogan again. My final pick comes from the IDW section on page 137 with Comic Book History of Animation number 2 of 5, written by Fred Van Lente with story and cover art by Brian Dunleavy. The team behind IDW's Comic Book History of Comics returns with a brand new series, from Aardman to Zoetrope, Disney to Miyazaki, Hanna-Barbera to Pixar, and everything in between. In this issue, sound comes to cartoons, and Walt Disney takes the world by storm with Mickey Mouse, Silly Symphonies, and Snow White. A whole slew of icons are created, from Fleischer's Betty Boop to Warner Brothers' Looney Tunes stars. But it's not all fun and laughter for the animation workforce, whose strike brings the industry to its knees. End shops December 16th for $3.99. Now, I missed the Comic Book History of Comics. I just wasn't able to fit it into my budget at the time. But I'm not going to miss out on the Comic Book History of Animation. I've read a couple of books about the history of animation, specifically about the Fleischer Brothers and the founder of Terry Toons. So I'm looking forward to seeing this new history of animation. Back to you, John, and thanks for providing this forum so that we can all share our enthusiasm for the comic book medium.
All right, guys, it's been building up for a while, and now it is here. Donnie Cates has been writing Venom. He's been doing Guardians of the Galaxy. He's been writing Thor. So Donnie's been writing some really good stuff at Marvel. His Thor run is really good. John and I are going to be reviewing that in the future, his first trade. But the one that I'm going to do, I'm in the Marvel Supplemental, by the way, in case you haven't guessed. It's on page 8 of the Marvel Supplemental. It is King in Black, number 1 of 5. It's a limited series. I guess you could call it an event. Yeah, it's going into his Venom and King in Black and Symbiote Spider-Man. So yeah, it's an event. It's a small event, five issues. Written by Donnie Cates. Artist is Ryan Stegman on this. But I'm going to read you the premise on this. For those of you who have not been following books in the Marvel U, after a campaign across the galaxy, Null's Death March arrives at Earth. And worse yet, he hasn't come alone. With an army of hundreds of thousands of symbiote dragons at his command, the King is Black. The King in Black is forced like any Earth's heroes have ever faced. Eddie Brock, aka Venom, has seen firsthand the chaos that even one of Null's symbiotic monsters can wreak. Will he survive an encounter with the god of the abyss himself? Yeah, Null is a god, so yeah, will he survive? So I've been reading all of Donnie Cates' books. I've been reading Venom. I've been reading the stuff he's done, Guardians of the Galaxy. I've been reading his Thor stuff. So this is a natural read for me. It is going to be tying into a few other issues, because Peter David's Symbiote Spider-Man, which he usually has these 5-issue series on Symbiote Spider-Man, and I really enjoy him, is tying into this as well. Because, yes, Symbiote Spider-Man is wearing a symbiote, so when symbiotes come to Earth, yeah, you would affect them. If this is something that you, sounds like you would enjoy, I would definitely check it out. I'm into it. It's going to be fun. Donnie Cates usually nails it when he writes something, so hopefully he nails this one and knocks it out of the park. On to my next pick.
Dr. Mo here with another pick for the Preview Spotlight episode. It's Sword, number 1, aka Classified X-Men title, number 1, from Marvel Comics. So in the wake of the Ten of Swords, X of Swords, Clash, whatever you want to call it, this Clash of Swords, the crossover that's going on right now with the X titles. The Krakoan status quo has shifted, and in December, there will be a new X-Men title launching called Sword. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with the concept of Sword, it was initially introduced during the Astonishing X-Men era and the concept was created by Joss Whedon and John Cassaday. SWORD stands, the acronym stands for Sentient World Observation and Response Department. It is led by Abigail Brand, who coincidentally dated the Beast at one point. And I'm sure, given the writer of the series, who is Al Ewing, that relationship will probably be revisited, but we'll see. Aiding Al Ewing in this series is artist Valero Sheedy. Now, if you remember, Al Ewing, Valero Sheedy were part of the creative team behind Marvel's recent Empire event. So I kind of sense, you know, that perhaps, you know, we're going to be dipping into, you know, the new status quo for Marvel's intergalactic titles as well. Keep in mind that Al Ewing also writes Guardians of the Galaxy. Really am intrigued by having the notion of a sort of space X-Men title based on the artwork that has been released. We know that Abigail Brand's part of the team along with young Cable. We saw Manifold, who, if you remember, he was in he played a part in the Avengers. He's also been a supporting cast member in Black Panther. And so I'm really kind of interested in this kind of mix of a dynamic, and I'm really curious to see where this goes. I'm also wondering if this series will last longer than 6 issues. That's because the previous volume of Sword, which was written by Kieran Gillen, came out about 10 years ago, only had 6 issues. But, you know, given that Al Ewing is one of Marvel's hot writers at this moment, I suspect that this title will have a bit of runway. If you are interested in sort of the space, intergalactic, sort of cosmic X-Men realm, which, quite frankly, I do enjoy. I did enjoy some X-Men cosmic titles. I just feel like sometimes X-Men may stay out in space a little too long, but when we do go out in the GR realms, I do enjoy those types of story arcs. I know that at this moment, there's so many X-Men titles, and I think that for me, I'm hoping that Ten of Swords will kind of reset the decks for me, and I can kind of make decisions about which titles I want to buy and so forth. But I definitely am curious about the Sword series. Definitely, again, I'll be buying the first couple issues just to kind of see what's happening, and then I'll make a decision about how I want to proceed. Sword, number 1, can be found on page 28 of the Marvel catalog, and costs $4.99.
Hey, this is James back with another pick in the Marvel Supplemental. This time I'm on page 38, where I'm going to call out X-Men number 16 by Jonathan Hickman and Phil Noto as artist. By the way, I really love Phil Noto's art. It's always been, you know, enjoyable to me, no matter what title he's working on. The only reason why I'm going to call this one out is Jonathan Hickman's been kind of like the overseer of all the mutant titles. He's not writing all the mutant titles, but he was directing them as we worked up to X of Swords. I've read the first 2 chapters of X of Swords, and I am fully on board. I am loving it. I'm enjoying it a lot. I would rate it as A material. The first issue probably an A. The second issue probably an A-. There's only been two issues since I'm doing this solicit here. But X-Men number 16, it is on the X of Swords Fallout. Now, they're not going to give you a lot of details because we can't spoil X of Swords, but it says the Captain Commander of Krakoa made a fateful decision. There's no going back. So I want to see what this fateful decision is. I'm sure that it will appear in the X of Swords story. Jonathan Hickman has been killing it. If you have not been keeping up on the X titles, That's okay. What I would recommend is you get the hardcover for House of X, Powers of X, which you can still get from Eric over at Calabunga. I believe it's $50 for the first 12 issues, House of X, Powers of X, which was kind of like, it's not a relaunch of the X-Men, but it's a new direction for the X-Men, and it really gets you excited and on board. And then it's building up to this, so I would immediately follow up with reading the hardcover of The X of Swords, which is going to be solicited in here. I may call out later, hint, hint, but because it was a really excellent title. So this is a lot of fun. I want to see the fallout. Jonathan Hickman, like I said, anything that he's writing with superheroes, whether it, you know, goes back to when he's writing Fantastic Four or when he's writing Avengers, has just been superb. He does not do anything without a lot of planning and forethought to years in advance where this story is going to end up, which, you know, not all writers can do. They're not all planned out that way. And I appreciate that he does, and I can read it and appreciate it for what it is. So on to my next pick. Hey, this is James back with another pick inside the Marvel Supplemental. And this one is on page 51. And it is Thor number 10 by Donnie Cates. Nick Klein is the artist. I'm going to keep this short and sweet. John and I just did a review, a back issue spotlight on Jason Aaron's Thor. We're going to do another back issue spotlight talking about the first six issues of Donnie Cates' Thor. Thor has never been my favorite character. My favorite thing about Thor, if you go back through Marvel history, you know, I did like some of the classic runs, of course, but he was never a character that I'm like was my go-to. You know, Simonson's run was great. But, you know, for Thor, for me, the time though when I enjoyed Thor is when he was fighting the Hulk, because I love the Hulk. So he was just a strong guy that I could see fight with the Hulk. But what's happened here is Thor has become a central figure in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, now also in the comic universe. And these stories, I don't know where Donnie Cates is going to take this, but the great thing about Jason Aaron's is it didn't spill out into the rest of the Marvel books. The War of the Realms was kind of a self-contained event, and it was part and parcel of his Thor run. It was Thor-centric. And Donnie Cates, he's only 10 issues in, but he has just done a tremendous job. The first six issues were kind of breathtaking writing, and I was so sad when Jason Aaron was leaving that to read Donnie Cates, I'm not disappointed. I'm kind of happy. You know, I'm happy with where the book is. It was left in good hands. And Donnie Cates is a very different writer, but just as capable. So if you have not jumped on the Thor bandwagon, you need to do so now. This one, it's talking about the dark prison of Donald Blake. For years, Donald Blake has wandered a land far from Midgard, the place he once thought home. Now he has returned to the Ten Realms. Yes, there were Ten Realms. That was part of Jason Aaron's things, not nine. But it is not the place it was, nor he the man who once shared a body with a god. New terrors await, and what perhaps Donnie Cates' darkest story yet. Sounds kind of cool. I'm on board. Check it out. All right, this is James back with another pick in the Marvel Supplemental. This time I'm on page 76 and 77, where we have the 50th anniversary. Yes, 50 years of Conan in comics. King Size Conan number one. This is a one shot, by the way. It's not going to be a series, even though if they would write a King Size Conan series, I would love it and I would buy every issue. This one is $6.99, but it's 64 pages, and I will be getting it for probably $3 or $3.50 from Cowabunga. Now, I'm going to read to you right now the creative team on this, because this is kind of cool and it's going to be a lot of writers. Roy Thomas. Yes, Roy Thomas is back on Conan. Who doesn't want to read that? Every Conan fan will want to read that. Kurt Busiek, who killed it on Conan over at Dark Horse. He's going to be writing here. Chris Claremont, who doesn't write very much now, is going to be writing here. Kevin Eastman, Steve S. DeKnight. They're all going to be writing. Artists, Steve McNiven, great. Pete Woods, Roberto De La Torre. Kevin Eastman also is going to be doing the art for his thing. And Jesus Saiz is another artist, and he's actually really excellent. There's several covers for this. When I say several, there's not a crazy, crazy amount, but there's like five or six of them. They're amazing, and honestly, it's hard to decide. I'm not a multiple cover guy, but they have me looking here because these are beautiful. Joe Jusco, Joe Buscema. I don't even know who the main cover is. Cover by Andrew C. Robinson looks beautiful. Carlos Pacheco. Man, that's some good stuff. Anyways, so this is going to be a hodgepodge. I usually hate anthologies. I've grown to hate them. But this is Conan, my favorite character. Savage Sword of Conan, Savage Tales was an anthology, but it was actually kind of good. I'm on board for this one. This is going to be excellent. If you're a Conan fan for the 50th anniversary, you have to buy this. You cannot skip this. There's sample artwork on the next few pages. It's just beautiful, gorgeous. Everyone should be on board this if you read Conan. If you don't, you're crazy. On to my next pick.
It's Brawlinator again, and I know I'm not alone in my excitement for this next comic. It's on page 76 of the Marvel Preview Supplemental, and it's none other than the king-size Conan one-shot, which is dubiously emblazoned with a number one on the cover. Has it really been 50 years? Yes, according to my calendar, it was back in 1970 when Roy Thomas brought Robert E. Howard's Conan the Barbarian to Marvel Comics. And to celebrate this momentous occasion, Marvel is putting out an oversized special spanning the breadth of Conan's life and times by a bevy of great creators, including Roy Thomas and Steve McNiven, who've produced an all-new prelude to the original Conan number one. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles creator Kevin Eastman is also in this. He's writing and directing his very first Marvel story. And even Marvel Comics legend Chris Claremont teams up with Roberto De La Torre to unveil a turning point in Conan's career as a mercenary. Kurt Busiek, who also had a great run on Conan over at Dark Horse Comics, teams up with Pete Woods to recount another early Conan tale. And finally, Conan and Bellette are together again for the first time since Marvel's 2019 Conan relaunch, with Jesus Saez illustrating a story by none other than Stephen S. DeKnight. You may recognize his name. He was the showrunner, director, and writer of several episodes of Netflix's Daredevil. Now, Marvel is billing this as a perfect introduction for new readers and an essential comic for diehards like myself. Look it over. It's on page 76 in the Marvel Supplemental with plenty of variant covers.
Hey, this is James back with some more picks in the Marvel Supplemental. And I'm just going to tell you, with the Omnibuy coming out and the hardcovers, it's just insanity. I repeat, it's insanity. There's some good stuff coming out, and it's so hard to get it down. I'm not going to shout this one out, but I did notice you, Aliens, the original years, the Dark Horse stuff that's come over to Marvel. Probably going to pick that one up. There's a Spider-Man by Roger Stern omnibus, considering it. It's a new printing, but I never picked it up originally. There's a Defenders omnibus. I have that all in singles, but man, that's so tempting. Thunderbolts omnibus. That's so tempting. Kurt Busiek writing the Thunderbolts. But the omnibus that I'm going to call out is on page 91. The All-New Wolverine by Tom Taylor omnibus hardcover. And I will tell you about this. Tom Taylor's a writer, and it's penciled by, let's see, five or six artists, who knows. It went for quite a while. It's 776 pages for $100. Correction there from Cowabunga, it's $50 for 776 pages, which is very reasonable for a big, nice hardcover. This was when Wolverine was dead. We got All New Wolverine, which is X-23. I hate to say the All New, you know, the Mantle of Wolverine. There's no Mantle of Wolverine. It says All New Wolverine, but it's X-23. She wasn't Wolverine. But it was an excellent, excellent series. John and I reviewed it, and I think we reviewed a couple of the issues back in the day, and it was great. We both loved it and enjoyed it. Tom Taylor usually kills it on anything he's writing, and he really killed it here. There was some myth and some lore where you have Gabby meeting clones and younger people, and the mythos was just expanded a little bit and was really just excellent. I didn't want Wolverine to come back. I was happy reading All New Wolverine because it was so good. I mean, I like Wolverine. I jest when I say that. But this stuff was just so good. This is All New Wolverine issues 1 through 35, annual number 1, and Generations Wolverine and All New Wolverine. I can't remember what that was, Generations, but I'm sure I probably read it. So if you didn't get a chance to pick this up, get it. It's coming out April 2021. Like I said, $50 from Cowabunga. Excellent stuff by Tom Taylor. On to my next pick. Hey, this is James back, and this is going to be my final pick, even though there's other stuff that I could, you know, shout out because there's so much good stuff in here. I'm on page 97 in the Marvel Supplemental, and the thing that I'm going to shout out, it's coming out January 2021. It is X of Swords hardcover, of course written by basically everyone who's writing the X title, Jonathan Hickman being the key one, and penciled by everyone and their brother because it's going across so many titles. But this is the, I believe it was 22 issues, X of Swords crossover, if you want to call it. I don't call it a crossover. It's a contiguous story. Just one big issue 1 to issue 22 story of X of Swords. So if you did not want to pick up the singles, you could not pick up the singles, the singles were maybe too expensive, you can pick up a hardcover here. It says it's 648 pages, and then the other one's 647 for the other cover, so I guess you get one less page with one of the covers, or just a typo. The page count may be off a little bit, but this one's going to be $100, but you do not need to pay $100. You can pick up a hardcover of this whole thing for $50. I've been enjoying it so much, yes, I'm going to double dip, so I'm going to keep my Hawks Pox and then my X of Swords side by side, kind of bookends into the Jonathan Hickman X world. And I'll enjoy those. Anyone who's going to ask for a good X story or, you know, something to read, I'll be like, start with this and finish with this. Hand them two volumes. Because it's really tremendous stuff. It gets me excited about the X world, the X books. So if you're someone who fell off or just lost your passion, this may get the juices flowing as far as like getting you excited about the franchise again. So that's my last pick from Marvel. And then on to the back half of the previous catalog.
It's Brawlinator again, and I'm on page 101 of the Marvel Previews, and this is a resolicit, I believe. So if you pre-order your books, you may not see it on your order form immediately. I have been reassured by Eric over at Cowabunga that it will appear on final order cutoff, though. It's The Eternals by Jack Kirby, monster-sized hardcover. Now, this tome is 384 pages, but it's oversized, meaning the trim size is a little better than 13 inches by 21, and it collects the entire 1976 through 1978 run of Kirby's Eternals, all 20 issues. Now, I don't care much about the movie or if this ties into it. This was just a great, imaginative, creative comic series from the Bronze Age. Kirby wrote and penciled the series, which tells the story of a new set of heroes, the Eternals, who were godlike creatures who fought the Greeks, the Romans, and the Norse gods before leaving Earth to explore the stars. Now, they must return to Earth, however, to protect humanity from their enemies, the Deviants. And both the Eternals and the Deviants must reckon with even higher beings who created them all, the dreaded Celestials. Kirby began the series in July 1976. The original run ended in 1978 when it was canceled. Now, writer Peter B. Gillis and Sal Buscema revived it in a 12-issue miniseries in 1985, and Neil Gaiman and John Romita Jr. brought them back for another series in 2006. That entire saga, including several other comics, is also being collected in a 1,200-plus page hardcover omnibus coming out soon, if it hasn't already. But this is just Kirby's Eternals, and it's really the only other monster-sized collected edition that I'm aware of, other than Busiek and Alex Ross's Marvels, which they put out last year in this same massive format. Now, this may not be for everyone, but Kirby fans should definitely take note. The solicit is found on page 101 of the Marvel Previews, but again, you will probably have to have a chat with your LCS to order it. It's The Eternals Monster Size by Jack Kirby on page 101 of the Marvel Previews. It's Brawlinator, and I'm on to the indie publishers. I'm a Sword and Sandals and Sorcery fan, hence I like Conan and Red Sonja as well. On page 150, Dynamite is putting out another series featuring Robert E. Howard's Redheaded She-Devil with a Sword, and this one is by writer Luke Lieberman and fan-favorite artist Walter Giovanni, who is best known for illustrating Gail Simone's seminal run on Red Sonja. This miniseries is a sequel to Lieberman's previous series, Birth of the She-Devil, and it takes place just a few months later, essentially in Sonja's second year as an adventurer. So if you picked up Birth of a She-Devil, you won't want to miss this miniseries. It is found on page 150 in the Dynamite Entertainment section of Previews. It's Red Sonja, Price of Blood, number one.
Hey, it's Marvin again, and I am just recording this about page 150 of your previews guide. This is Red Sonja, The Price of Blood, written by Luke Lieberman and art by Walter Giovanni. I don't know anything about those two artists. However, I know this is a story from early in Red Sonja's days, and I'm kind of on board with Red Sonja right now with the Mark Russell run. I know that's coming to an end, but I thought I'd give this one a shot. I will definitely be going for the cover C, which is the Joseph Michael Linsner cover, which is the same artist I've been getting for all of the current run with, like I said, Mark Russell. So I'll be checking this one out, and I hope you do too. The description is pretty short, but it does talk about it being a story from her early time. I don't like reading the previews. I mean, I assume you guys can all do that. But I will definitely be checking this one out and getting at least the first few issues. I am unclear whether this is a ongoing series or a one shot. It doesn't say one way or the other, so I'm not sure. It's 32 pages at $3.99, and I'll be checking it out, and I hope you do too.
Hey, this is James back with another pick, and this time I'm in the Boom section, and I'm on page 194. This is not a new number one. It's just something that I read the first issue so far, and I really enjoyed the first issue, so I wanted to point it out. And I know Viking Joker, Marvin, he liked it too. Yeah, 194, We Only Find Them When They're Dead, number 4. It's coming out December 16th, standard $3.99. It's by Al Ewing and Simone DiMeo. I'm probably saying those names wrong. Simone DiMeo, I don't know how you say her name. But one thing I wanted to tell you about this is a weird book, yet very good. What happens is you have this society of people, and they're basically, you have these groups of people. I guess you could say they're a capitalist society, but they're not really, because there's quotas put on them and allocations of things. But they have these harvesters that go out into space. So people buy crafts, and they get allocated to take, you know, so much space or claim certain space. But they find deceased gods floating in the middle of space, the blackness of space. And they find these gods. They always find them when they're dead. That's the title. We Only Find Them When They're Dead. And they're very beautiful looking. And so literally the people, it's kind of like a race to get to your portion of the god. And the first issue, just so you know, I think our heroes or the protagonist or the group that's doing the cutting and finding, they're claiming like the cheek and the lip on the face to harvest, because people buy these things. So they go and they harvest it, stick it into their storage tanks on their ships, and they take it back and they sell them. And there's a markup, and then there's this group that watches them and makes sure that the allocations are fair. If you try to just rush in and take things without their approval on a claim, you know, you can be attacked and be killed. So it's really kind of a trippy thing to read, but it was a lot of fun. So I recommend, if you're into weird things, you might want to check this out, because it was a really good story. I'm waiting for the second issue, but I really enjoyed it. And on to my next pick.
Brawlinator again, and I am back with, yep, another Sword, Sorcery, and Sandals tale from the imagination of Robert E. Howard. This is one of the classic Howard tales of Conan. It's The Cimmerian, Frost Giant's Daughter, number 1. The story has been told and retold and previously published in versions by both Marvel and Dark Horse Comics. I'm interested in how Ablaze handles it, since they are touting their version as being the uncensored, unrestrained version. I've been picking up these Conan comics from Ablaze. I'm sorry, the Cimmerian comics from Ablaze. And they seem to be fun, but a little inconsistent at times. So check this out if you're a Conan completist. It is called The Cimmerian, Frost Giant's Daughter, number 1. It's from Ablaze. It's found on page 202 of this month's previews. Check it out.
This is Nick with a pick from Abstract Studios in the main previews catalog, coming from page 207. And this is a collection of a series that I read and enjoyed several years ago. That is Motor Girl by Terry Moore. It is set in his Strangers in Paradise universe, although I've never read that particular series, and it's certainly not needed to enjoy this one. I think there's just kind of a light crossover with some of the characters that are presented here. And, of course, written and drawn by Terry Moore, done in black and white. It is the, of course, specifically here I'm talking about the Motor Girl Omnibus, but there are also two separate Motor Girl trade paperbacks collecting the first half and second half of the series. You can get this in soft cover at 200 pages for $27.99, or hardcover for 200 pages at $39.99. And again, those two separate half trade paperbacks are $15.99 apiece. And just to read you the solicitation so you know what the series is about if you haven't read it. Says when a UFO crashes into Samantha's junkyard, she is happy to make repairs and send the little visitors on their way. But E.T. is smitten with the Marine veteran, and now an industrial giant wants to buy the land to install their anti-UFO weapon. With the help of her buddy Mike, a 600-pound gorilla, Sam is always prepared to defend those who can't defend themselves, but who will save Sam from the PTSD and shrapnel that threaten her life. To survive, Sam must ultimately face the greatest battle of her life, reality. And that pretty much does an accurate job describing what kind of themes and characters are involved in the story, but Terry Moore is very good at making each issue and each little chunk of the story meaningful and interesting and funny, and certainly accompanied by great art. So check this one out. And I've got a little note here as gift ideas. If you have read the series and want to gift it to someone for Christmas, maybe this would be your chance. Or maybe you can gift yourself this nice volume coming up at the end of the year.
Hey, this is James back with another pick, and this time I'm in the back half of previews, and I'm in the Ahoy Comics section on page 224, where there is a sequel. I didn't know there would be a sequel. It is The Second Coming, The Only Begotten Son, number one, by Mark Russell. The artist is Richard Pace, Leonard Kirk. Okay, The Second Coming, I'm not going to spoil it for those of you who haven't read it, but it was an excellent read. Mark Russell has some excellent write-ups at the end of the comics about why he wrote this and stuff. But basically, you see Jesus return to Earth, and you see superheroes and how they interact. And I'll just leave it there. So we have a meeting of like a Superman-like character meeting this person, and you know the goodness of what you have from the Bible versus the goodness of what, you know, some people look at, you know, virtues and stuff with like a superhero. So it was really kind of a cool read. And, you know, I know this may be offensive to some, but it wasn't offensive to me. And I thought it was a really good read. Mark Russell deals with heavy topics lately. But if this is something that offends you, definitely don't go down this path. But if you're into a good writer, I will say that Mark Russell's able to overcome barriers a lot. When he wrote Flintstones, he dealt with heavy topics, but he did it in a way that didn't offend anyone. And I would say he did the same thing with his Red Sonja run. There's topics that come out and weird things, you know, about being a leader and things like that, that speak volumes but don't offend. And I think that's a tricky thing to do in today's world. So I'm definitely on board for this. I'm going to check it out. And I'm just happy that there was a sequel after we got to read the first six issues. So this was originally supposed to be over at DC, well, actually with Vertigo, but Vertigo no longer exists, and now it moved over to Ahoy. So here it is, back for The Second Coming, and I'm back for a second helping. On to my next pick. Hey, this is James back with another pick, and this time I'm in the AWA section. Artists, Writers, and Artisans, my probably favorite new publisher, but I'm pretty sure, yeah, favorite new publisher. And everything that's been coming out, it's just been amazing. And the talent that they get on these books is just kind of like mind-blowing. They keep getting top-level talent to come over here and write these books. And I've enjoyed pretty much every one of them. I think there's only one that I didn't love, but all of them I've just been flabbergasted with the quality of the books. Okay, So there was two number ones. One was called Bite Size by Cullen Bunn, and the other one's Erratic by Carrie Andrews. But I'm going to call that one out. On page 246, Erratic by Carrie Andrews, and he's also the illustrator. And most of these series from AWA are typically five issues. This one says issue one of five. And I'm going to tell you what it's about because, you know, I can't tell you about my experience with the book because I haven't read it yet. It looks like a superhero one, and if you're guessing by the picture, it is. You're 15 years old. You suddenly granted incredible powers. Cool, right? There's only one problem. You can only use your powers for 10 minutes at a time. What do you do when you have to save the world, but you only have 10 minutes to do it? This is the problem faced by Oliver Leaf, a teenager who has just moved to a new town and a new school and is having a hard enough time navigating classes and his crush before the interdimensional monsters started showing up. So it sounds like it's going to be geared towards younger people, but I honestly don't know. But it sounds like a cool premise. Carrie Andrews is a great artist. He's excellent. And he's a decent writer because he's written some stuff in the past, and it's just eluding me now, but it's been good. I've enjoyed it. So I'm on board to check this out. I'll at least check out the first issue, and I may go from there. But AWA, top-notch stuff. Everyone should give it a try. And this may be my last pick. I'm not sure. I'm going to kind of thumb through the back half. But this is, if this is my last pick, I just wanted to say thanks to all of you who submit clips, and thanks to John for hosting this for us.
Brawlinator again, and this is one for fans of George A. Romero's zombie tales. The Romero name is linked with zombies and horror films as much as Coca-Cola is linked to soda pop. Even those unfamiliar to horror know that Night of the Living Dead is the wellspring from which just about all zombie culture was born. Now, unfortunately, George A. Romero, who brought us horror classics like Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Creepshow, and the TV show Tales from the Dark Side, passed away a few years ago back in 2017. However, his son, George C. Romero, has taken on the mantle and continues to bring shock and terror to horror fans everywhere. Now, George Cameron Romero had been working on a prequel, or rather a prologue, to 1968's Night of the Living Dead, titled Rise of the Living Dead, described as a love letter to his father and set in the same world as Night of the Living Dead. It is now a comic titled The Rise, and you can see the solicit. It's on page 277 of the previews catalog. Heavy Metal will be publishing this. It's a 6-issue limited series, but it isn't necessarily a prequel as much as it's a story that takes place at the genesis of the zombie apocalypse from Night of the Living Dead. So a prologue, if you will. The project has been a decade in the making, and hopefully for fans of zombie horror, it will be worth the wait and worthy of the name Romero. Again, it's The Rise number 1 from Heavy Metal Magazine. The publishing comics, too, it's found on page 277 of this month's previews. It's Brawlinator again, and in the back of the book, on page 307, I spotted some of Scout Comics' offerings and wanted to mention Metal Shark Bro. Again, it's on page 307. This is Metal Shark Bro, What the Fin, the trade paperback from Bob France and Kevin Koofy. It's basically a tale of a supernaturally created anthropomorphic shark with a taste for metal music and a propensity for violence. But all he wants to do is become a normal shark again. Now, this collects the 4-issue miniseries that started it all, and it's probably a great book for fans of Aqua Teen Hunger Force or Rick and Morty. See it for yourself. It's Metal Shark Bro, What the Fin, the trade paperback. I think this is the second printing. It's over on page 307 in the Scout Comics section of this month's previews. On page 309 of this month's previews, it's another installment of the irreverent Sham Comics with their latest 80-page giant. Did you ever wonder what happens when copyrights run out on comic books? In this case, it means cartoonist Tim Fuller can take public domain funny books from the 40s and 50s and rewrite them with hilarious results. These classics have been turned into new stories for hip, cynical comic readers much like myself. These are not for everyone, but they can be quite funny if you're in the right mood. And this edition is 80 pages of all-new Golden Age classics done up sham style, featuring Bozo the Robot, Lingerie Lass, Ray Gun Jr. of the Space Force, Johnny Sassback, and the secret origin of Captain Attaway, along with much, much more. Take a look for yourself. It's over on the top of page 309 of the previews catalog, and give it your consideration. It's Sham Comics 80-page giant.
All right, this is James, and I was a liar. I said that last pick would be my last pick, but it is not. What I'm going to use in my last pick is there was something that I don't normally get, and it was over in on page 336, Warrant Publishing Company. Normally they do this Warrant magazine. It's similar to the Warren magazines from back in the day, but they had one that seems to be a ripoff of a character that I really like, so I just want to read this. I don't think it's going to be an ongoing. Could be. I don't know. But this one's called Vampirus Carmilla magazine number 1. So I did get some of the Warrant magazines in the past, and they were kind of cool. They're written like a anthology or collection of stories, so some of them I really liked and then some I didn't like, so I kind of dropped it. I'm like, I'm not really an anthology guy. They start to irk me after a while. So this one may be an anthology, so I don't know how long, but it looks like it's ripping off or copying Vampirella, which was in Warren Magazine, so I would guess that would be it. So Vampirus number 1 receives the iconic Warren Illustrated Horror Magazine of the 60s, 70s by replicating Warren's early page layouts and publishing new classic-styled work by original Warren artists, writers, and editors. Each issue is a highly collectible instant classic. Well, I don't care about the highly collectible. I just want to read it for the story. But it's 52 pages, black and white, $5.95. I just saw this, and I figure I'd shout it out, even though I said I was done on the last one. Now I'm really done. So on to the rest of you guys.
For my last pick, you may have to really work to get a copy of this comic, much like TKO Comics or the upcoming Bad Idea Comics. Alterna Comics can no longer be found in the previews catalog. Now you have to go directly to the source, and one such comic that they're putting out this month that I think is worth the effort is Josh Howard's T-Bird and Throttle. Heavily influenced by the art of Bruce Timm and Batman the Animated Series, T-Bird and Throttle is a sci-fi superhero miniseries written and illustrated by Josh Howard, with a concept that was swiped by none other than Tom King for his Strange Adventures series, allegedly. This tells the story of a disgraced former superhero on his road to redemption who must confront his past while a sinister conspiracy threatens to destroy his legacy once and for all. You can pre-order the first issue of T-Bird and Throttle now at alternaaccess.com. Now, each of these four issues clocks in at 80 pages, and you will be impressed with both the story and the artwork. If you look hard enough, you can read a zero issue for free online and check it out for yourself. Again, at alternaaccess.com. And that's it for me this month. Once again, thank you, John, for allowing us to participate in these fun monthly previews episodes. I do look forward to hearing everyone's recommendations, and I'll see you on the Slack channel.
I hope everybody found something they were interested in previews this month. There's a ton of stuff coming out. For me, all my stuff happened to be picks in DC, but I'm still getting tons of stuff from the other publishers. Well, tons is relative. Nowhere near what I used to be getting. I'm getting like 5 things from Image, 2 from Dark Horse, 5 from IDW, about 21 from Marvel, 3 from Boom. Really not much from the back half this time, but honestly, I haven't gone and really filled out my order entirely yet, so some of that's probably going to change. But I want to thank everybody who sent in clips. I want to thank Billy, Chris, James, Marvin, Mo, Nick, and Todd. Thanks for sending in clips. This would have been a much shorter episode without you guys. And again, we've got an open submission policy on these episodes. Everyone is welcome to send in clips, and please do it as often as you can and as early as you can, because it takes a while to edit these episodes, and I love having all the different voices and stuff on there and all the different viewpoints. Because like I said, there's a ton of stuff in previews. It's easy for stuff to get lost in the shuffle. This is your chance to help out the publishers, creators, and comics you love. So with that, we'll call it an episode.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.